Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening. My name is Brenda McCoy, also known as Lady Brenda, and you are listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. This evening, Esther Luttrell, author and inspirational speaker, will be joining us to talk about her communication with loved ones and especially her son on the other side. Before we get started, though, let's join me in welcoming our co-hosts. Maureen, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm very much looking forward to the interview that you will be having with Esther, as a matter of fact. Yes.
I think it would be right up your alley, especially in lieu of the season and what has gone on in your own life.
Yeah, exactly. And I identify, though it's a good time. It's the timing. It's always about timing. It's good timing for me to answer there. Thank you, Brenda, for...
Timing is everything. So, Maureen, tell us about what you do for Psychic Access.
I'm a crazy woman. I'm crazy good. No, I'm an intuitive psychic consultant, but also I have... I'm empath, as we all are, but sometimes it can be very hard for me. But I utilize the tarot. That's my main tool for me to be able to understand the impressions and feelings that I may be getting, in order for me to be very objective and giving the best reading I can. And I will also feel that every negative can be a positive. That's the way I read.
You know, I really like that, too, because really it's polarity, and there's always two sides of the coin, and two sides to every situation, too, right?
And choice, yeah, choice to be able to make the right direction to go there. Thank you, Brenda.
Well, thank you, Maureen. Steve, how are
Good
you
evening.
Doing this evening?
Very well, thank you, Brenda. I'm excited about the show. I always look forward to our Thursday evenings.
I know, aren't they awesome? They're getting more and more awesome, too.
They're so interesting, and we have such a good time, and I learn so much. We've covered so many different subjects. It's
we
very
have.
Exciting.
A veritable plethora.
Yes.
Yes. So tell us, Steve, about your expertise.
Well, I am a psychic medium and spiritualist. So I believe very much in spirit and the fact that we all have spirits, that we came from the spirit world and maintain contact with the spirit world. And I believe in the continued existence of the soul, obviously. I'm interested in all forms of metaphysics. I spend a lot of time studying and reading because I find this domain just fascinating. There's so much to learn. We couldn't possibly do it all in even one lifetime. But I'm particularly interested in Hermetic astrology because I find it very accurate for understanding the psyche and for understanding circumstances, and very good for accurately predicting events as well.
You know, I like, we should do a show on Hermetic astrology because I think a lot of our audience really doesn't know what that definition is.
Yes, and I could actually contact my mentor and ask him if he would like to do it. That's a great idea.
I
would love
to
do more alien stuff as well.
Oh, absolutely.
We've got to do more of that. I'm reading John Varlo Melchizedek's book, The Ancient Secrets of the Flower of Life, and it is so interesting. It's one of those books you just can't put down. I had about 4 hours of sleep last night because I couldn't stop reading.
Ah. Well, thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Okay, Bobby.
Yes, hello.
Are you here? Well, you're here, obviously. You have made your grand
I'm not, interest. Actually. No, I'm away. This is an electronic voice filling in for me, and I don't know why I'm talking like this. I think it's following Steve. Like,
oh, stop. You've made your entrance now. Tell us what you're all about.
well, that's psychic medium and working with people like our guest tonight. She reminds me, and we'll talk about this later, but she reminds me of a lady who came to one of my workshops in interest in getting in touch with her son. And that's all she wanted to do. And now, 10 years, 12 years later, I think she's told me she's kind of doing this for a living now. So it's very interesting how people get into this and the motivation that opens a person up, you know. So I can definitely relate to tonight's guest. But otherwise, yeah, just like Steve, tuning into the other side, connecting people with their loved ones, and then also doing coaching as well.
Yes, and I can personally attest to that, having you've been a guest at our spiritual salon in Temecula twice.
Love that, by the way. Yes. It's so wonderful. Your daughter has such a great place there, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. And I hear you're going to be doing another one with Georgia.
I am, actually, yeah, and close to San Diego and at mm-hmm. towards the end of the month here. So I'm looking forward
great.
To that as well. Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you, Bobby. And now for myself, I work at psychicaccess.com, and my name is Lady Brenda, and I am a predictive psychic. I specialize in dates, times, and places. So, now on to our special guest, Esther Luttrell. She doesn't really claim to be a psychic, a religious philosopher, or anything like that. She just is a mother who lost her boy and has been blessed with being able to communicate with him from the other side. Like everyone, Esther wondered where her son had gone after his death. What was he up to? Where was he? Was he among the stars? Was he standing beside her from another dimension? Was he happy? Was he in pain? All these questions came to her, and then some unusual things started happening after her son's death. And she knew she needed to read about. She knew she needed to start writing about it, write a book about it. And then she found a manuscript in which he detailed his death and what it was like on the other side. It was a manuscript entitled Dream. Even down to the room in the hospital in which he died, she began to write the book based on these messages and the messages that her son gave her from the spirit realm. Her book is called Dear Dean, Love Mom. His descriptions of the afterlife brought great comfort to Esther. Even more were his contacts with other loved ones that had passed away in the family. The mystery of his own life's path was revealed to her, and she could finally understand the reason for his death and his continuing purpose in her and her family's life. Now, if you want to find out more about this, more details, you can visit Esther's website at www.estherluttrell.com or www.deardeanlovemom.com. So, without further ado, good evening, Esther.
My goodness, I got so caught up in that, I wondered who did all that wonderful stuff. I want to meet her, too.
Fabulous you.
Thank you. And thank you for calling. That's very sweet of you. And our friend yeah. Karen Tate. You're a friend of Karen Tate, right?
Yes, that's right. She was one of my first, I think she was my first guest when I came on board on this show. And she's a marvelous author and speaker as well. And she mm-hmm. highly recommended you.
Well, she highly recommended you to me. So she's just a lovely person.
She really is. She's a connector. You know, I wanted
yes.
to, people wonder about all this stuff all the time. And, you know, in my own experiences, I mean, with people who've passed over and shown, they show up in my dreams and communicate with me. But I had a question right off the get-go is, had you, before this happened, had any really strong psychic experiences before your son's death?
I didn't think I had. You know, looking back on it, when I sat down to write the book, and I was trying to decide where you begin, and I thought that I would begin it with something that happened when I was a little girl, and do we have time for me to tell that quick story? I'll be as brief as I know how to
yes,
be.
Yes,
which
of course.
May not be very brief. But when I was a little girl, I loved to go to my grandma's house, Grandma Delamater. And Mama and Grandma would sit on the sofa, and in this house was a big feather bed like a lot of our grandmas used to have. And I'd sit in the middle of the feather bed playing in her button box, Well, at the end of the bed was a rocking chair, and it was turned at an angle so that it kind of faced me and it kind of faced Mom and Grandma on the sofa. And in that chair was Grandpa. And Grandpa always wore the same thing. He always had on a nice white shirt with a black sweater and a little black bow tie and black pants. And he was very dignified, and he would smoke his pipe, and I'd look up at him every now and then, and he'd smile at me and just give me a little twinkle in his eye. And I just adored that man. And then there were, you know, I was there. I was a little girl, but I was there until I was about 9, 10 years old. So he was a big part of my life. One day, it's 52 years later, and I am at my aunt's house. And I said to my aunt, we were talking about family, and I said, you know, I just loved Grandma and Grandpa DeGlomater. The funny thing is, I can't remember Grandpa DeGlomater ever talking. And she said, well, I guess not. He died years before you were ever born.
Oh, wow.
So unknowns to me, yes, I guess I had an experience. But what's so weird, Brenda, is a situation like that, when you don't know for 52 years, it's like if you're remembering your favorite teacher or a favorite uncle, just part of your childhood, and nothing unusual, nothing weird about them, just live and it's just a memory that's very, very clear.
Like he was a full apparition that you saw as a child, which many children do see full apparitions.
Yeah, but he certainly... I thought he was just Grandpa sitting in the rocking chair. Absolutely.
That is wild. Oh, my goodness.
So that was a shock. You don't want to learn something like that 52 years after the fact. That was like a
psychic experience in retrograde. Now, when before your son's death, did you have any kind of indication that he was going to die, or do you have any psychic feelings about that?
Oh, no. My gosh, no. He was so full of life and had such a great attitude about life and people. No. And yet, as I say that, I realize that's not true, now that you make me think about it. I remember being on a plane, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years before that. And there was a song that came on. Who sang that song? And when one of us is gone and one of us is left to carry on. Remember the lyrics?
Yes, I do, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember
song?
Who it is, but I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Can you sing? You know how it went?
And
no. One of us is gone and one of us is left. Oh, well, anyway. Anyway, I remember, even right now, I remember thinking that one day Dean would be gone. And I started crying. And then I really smacked myself mentally in the face, because what a weird thought to have. Dean would be, at that point, maybe 21, 22, going to college. Not a reason in this world to think that. But that memory is so strong that I flashed on it many times over the years, that one instant.
Wow. So what age was he when he passed over?
28.
And, you know, isn't it interesting? I mean, just that age itself. I mean, some people, you know, equate it to astrology and the Saturn return. But if we think there's an awful lot of high-profile celebrities that have died between 27, 28. Janis Joplin died at 28, you know. Jimi Hendrix. 28 seems to be almost like a rite of passage thing if the young people are going to decide they want to leave this earth. Have you ever noticed that before?
I haven't, but I did get, I was redoing, in fact, when you said go to www.deardean.com, don't go yet, because I tore down the website and I'm completely redoing it. And it's about, it'll be finished, hopefully by tomorrow it'll be finished. But as I was redoing it, I was looking through some wonderful letters that people have sent to me after reading the book. And this one woman wrote, and she was talking about how she happened to pick the book up at her library, and then she had happened in quotes. And she said, and it just, the last chapters grabbed my heart, because you write that Dean died at 28. My daughter April died, or her daughter, her name wasn't April, she died. Dean died at 28, her daughter died at 28. Dean died on April 17th, her daughter died on April 17th. And her daughter had just died when she went to the library and happened, quote, to find my book. And she felt that that was just, she said, hello from heaven, from Dean and her daughter's name. I can't remember right off the top of my head. But anyway, she said, you know, nothing happens by chance, because the book helped her so much in her grief with her daughter.
You know, and it's interesting. I believe that, you know, even through this, and don't you think that perhaps Dean, you know, his messages have helped not only you, but other people, and through you, other people that are going through the same type of grief?
Well, it was going out and giving talks across the country. I speak at a lot of churches as a guest speaker, but a lot of other organizations too. And in talking about Dear Dean, so many people came up to me as I went on this tour and started telling me their stories, like the letter that I just talked about. And I realized I wanted to do more than just go out and talk to people. I wanted to hear their stories. I wanted to interact. So I created something called Between Heaven and Earth Workshops. And those have been, oh gosh, what a blessing, and they're so wonderful. People show up and they say, I was just in town, passing through town, I don't even know why I came in here today, but I just lost my brother, sister, mother, whatever, and I realize I'm not here by accident. I hear things like that all the time, and so we have these Between Heaven and Earth workshops, which are absolutely free. I don't charge for them at all. My host that brings me in, it's free. But I have seen hearts mended right there on the spot. And I'm so grateful. People say, how could anything good come of the death of your son whom you just adored? Well, to be honest, Dean lives on through the book.
He's actually immortalized through this. He's doing his work from the other side.
He is. He's keeping me so busy. I go, slow down, bud. I ain't got time for this. slow down. You're bringing me too many people. Hold everything. But I do. I often tell him, you know, you brought me 10 people in the last month. What am I supposed to do? I'm not Mother Teresa. They call crying, and I listen, and I say what I can. But I don't have any magic. I don't know anything, really. I can only pass on what Dean keeps imposing on me. And that's, Mama, tell him, life and love are eternal, and I'm not going to give up till you've told everybody who will listen who needs to know. Life
doesn't
end.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's inspiring. Another thing that I found was curious, and this is like the first thing that I just jumped out at me when I was reading your bio and your page, is that he actually wrote, was it a manuscript called Dreamer, or he wrote about his death, didn't he?
About a week after he died, I just could not get myself together to work. And one day I said, well, I was very neat at that time. I'm not so neat now, but I was very neat then. And every time I would sit down in this rocking chair in my office trying to drum up the courage, the guts to get back to work, I would notice this clear folder laying on the floor propped up against the baseboard. And it wasn't near where I worked. It was the other side of the room. There was no reason in this wide world for it to be there. And it wasn't there before Dean died. I know that because he died in Fresno and I was in Seal Beach, California. So there's nobody at home. There was nobody to put anything there. Finally, one day I said, okay, I don't know what that thing is, but I guess I better open it and move it wherever it goes. So I unsealed it. It's one of those kind of have a cord that wrap around a little button.
Right.
And inside was a manila folder. And the manila folder said dream in red ink, and it was Dean's handwriting. So, what is this? How did this get here? So I sat down in my rocking chair and I opened it, and it was just this. He said, "It's I forget the time now. I but my book is either 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, but it was in the wee hours." He said, "It's whatever it was in the morning. I just had a dream that was so powerful. I felt like I had to get up and write it." And he said in there, "I felt like it has significance, but I don't understand." And then the next, and it was dated March 17th, 1994, exactly 1 month before he died. And of course, he wasn't sick.
Wow.
He was, and so I turned the page, and it was, he'd written out his dream in detail. And in his dream, it was the exact circumstance. He saw himself as a little boy, and he was standing at the door of the emergency room in a hospital, and they were taking a gurney out of the ambulance, and he watched the attendants bring his grown-up self in on the gurney, and it passed by him. And he followed them in the elevator as they went up to ICU room 3. And I was there crying, and all of the detail, but he wrote it from the perspective of himself as a little boy, as he was in the dream. And then he died in ICU room 3. And at the very end, he saw an angel. And the angel said, "It's time, Dean." Now, he's a little boy watching from the doorway. And he said, there was the most brilliant light in there. And at the foot of the bed was the most beautiful angel you could ever imagine. And she held out her hand and said, "It's time, Dean." And the grown-up Dean in the bed said, "But what about Mom?" And the angel waited while the grown-up Dean in the bed wrote a note. And then he went with the angel. And Dean then said of the dream, "I just don't know what it meant. It wasn't even like a dream. It was so real." Well, in reality, on April the 17th, the day he died, I wasn't even in the room. I had stepped out of the room for the first time since he had entered the hospital a week before. And my husband said that Dean got a twinkle in his eye that was as if he had the most wonderful secret in the world. And he motioned for a yellow pad and that he'd been writing on. And Larry handed it to him. And Dean wrote one word, then he closed his eyes, and then he opened them again with a wonderful smile on his face, and then he closed them and died. And he wrote two more words, though, before he did. What happened next was the bells go off for the ventilator, and all nurses came running and all that. I didn't see that notebook. Larry said something about Dean had written something on a yellow pad, and I thought, well, one day I'll look and see what it was. When I was going through his things much later, the things from the hospital, taking all the stuff out of a bag, I saw the yellow pad, and I thought, oh, this must be what he wrote on that Larry was telling me about. Well, the first word he wrote was angel. And those last two words, when he opened his eyes again and smiled really big and his eyes twinkled, am eager. And then he closed his eyes and died. That is exactly what he wrote, about the dream. Remember, the angel came to the foot of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "It's time, Dean." He says, "What about my mom? She waited while Dean wrote me a note." I mean, so
that's amazing.
I knew he must have seen the angel. He must have. That's what the smile was about. Angel, am eager. So that's a tremendous amount of comfort in that.
That was like validation of stuff. And that was a mystery in how it
yeah.
showed up. But, you know, it could have been that it manifested even from him from the other side, too.
That's speculation. I don't know. I don't. It's amazing.
That's very
what
interesting,
I don't know.
Especially if you hadn't noticed it.
So
maybe you had a messy
know.
Office. Oh my goodness. So, after you had discovered all of this, and then you started writing your book, and he kind of opened the doorway with this.
Later.
communication. What were some of the messages that he gave you about the afterlife after he had passed over?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, where to begin? I went to visit my daughter from California. I went to New Jersey, where my daughter lived in a darling little cabin kind of out in the woods. And this is like 3 weeks later, maybe. And I was just, I was in the guest room, and it was night, and I was crying. I didn't want to cry in front of my daughter, but I was just boo-hooing. And it was one of those things, have you ever lost anyone you love? Have you had that experience?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Then you know how it's a physical pain. It just hits you in the stomach. You almost can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts so bad. There's no way you can sit down, stand up, lie down. There's no turn. There's nothing you can do. It's just
there's no escape from it, in other words.
There's no escape. And you can't imagine that it's ever going to stop. And I was going through that. And I just crying so hard. And I said, oh, Dean, honey, if only I knew that you were okay, that you're not afraid, that you still exist. If only I knew. And in that moment, I felt a breeze in my face so strong, it literally took my breath away. I was sitting up on the bed, on the edge of the bed. And I went, because it's like somebody just sitting in the middle of a big fan or something, and it just knocks your wind out. And I felt my hair pull back from my face, that kind of wind. And I thought, my gosh, what is this? And suddenly, I closed my eyes. Of course, when a wind is like that in your face, you can't hold your eyes open. And I had the sensation of flying. And I could see I was flying over a neighborhood street at night. I saw the house lights on in the house, the trees, the sidewalks, and then boom, we were up over the city, and then boom, we were up over trees and mountains, and then in an instant, and we were going so fast, and I realized that Dean was beside me, a little to my right and a little behind me, but I knew he was there, and we were just going so fast, and then we were in space, and we were still going, but had nothing to gauge it against. I didn't know how fast. And then in that instant, we were on what we think of as a moonscape. It was a planet that was totally midnight blue with a silver blue cast in places, and it was all full of rocks. To my left was a gigantic round boulder. Must have been 30 feet high. And that's all that was there, as far as I could see, just this moonscape of beautiful silver blue and midnight blue in the shadows. At the horizon was a very beautiful blue planet. And I thought, oh no, please don't tell me this is where Dean lives. It was so quiet. It was unearthly. It was so quiet. And I thought, it's so lonely, it's so desolate. And then I said it out loud. I said, Dean, this isn't where you live, is it? And Dean, still behind me and a little to my right, said, no, Mom, this isn't where I live. And I was so relieved. I said, I've been banished or something. And I said, then where is it, honey? Where are we? And he said, Mom, this is where I come when I want to study and be quiet and think. And I said, and what's that on the horizon? And he said, that's Earth. And that was the end of the dream. I opened my eyes, and I just, wow, I couldn't take it all in. And I went over it in my mind, and I said, oh, I'm still sitting on the side of the bed, and I wasn't asleep. And I said, oh, honey, thank you. Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you so much. And on my right cheek, I felt him kiss me. I felt the moisture. I felt his breath. And I felt it was a nice, firm kiss on the right cheek. And I just put my hand there and said, oh, God bless you. Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you so much. And I went to sleep. So, yeah, that was one of the times.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So do you believe that he showed you, you know, it's all, a lot of times people, when if they're in life, did he believe in heaven and angels and in like life from another planet? Because a lot of times that's their interpretation of where they go after they die.
We really never talked about it. I know that he loved anything that had to do with space. I mean, that was his passion. He had a painting up. I did a painting of him in a Star Trek uniform. I put it at the foot of his bed because I knew he got such a kick out of it. But he was just very enamored of space. He worked for an airline, wanted to be a pilot, but he was colorblind, so he couldn't. But anything to do with space. And he had a very strong spiritual bent. I can't say we really ever had long talks about it. There was a time, about a month before he died, where he told me I had another son that died before Dean was born, Todd. And he was telling me that he was talking to Todd, and he said, what? Todd? Who Todd? Todd who? He said, Mom, my brother Todd? I said, well, you don't know your brother Todd. He died before you were born. And he kind of chuckled, and he said, I don't know, he's been coming around a lot. I've really been talking to him a lot. So that was the first time I ever heard anything like that.
How interesting.
I said, well, you ever see him? And he said, well, I never did until the other morning I was shaving. And I was kind of chatting with him, and I saw him in the mirror standing behind me. I said, really, what's he look like? He said, well, he looks a lot like me. He's blonde. I said, really?
How interesting.
I look back on that now, and I'm sorry, did I interrupt you?
Oh, no. Keep going. I'm listening. I'm fascinated.
Well, I just, you know, in retrospect, when I sat down to write the book, and I was thinking about that, I just wondered if that wasn't Todd's way of making sure that he wasn't afraid of death, even though I'm sure that wasn't discussed or he would have told me. It was just his way of letting him know that life goes on. See, a lot of these things that happened with Dean, there were witnesses, you know, other people saw him. Or I would be saying, no, I think I just wanted it to happen. I think I just wished it, you know.
So he appeared to other family members then, right?
No other family members. Well, yes, Brooke saw it. My daughter saw him once. But I mean, like in a workshop, the students told me, and this is a screenwriting workshop, had nothing to do with anything spiritual, but he had been gone. In fact, I gave the workshops in his name and in his honor because he wanted to be a screenwriter, and that's what I did with his insurance money. I had worked for MGM and CBS, well, MGM longer, and I took out across the country helping young people, doing for them what I wish I had done for him, And I was giving a workshop in Providence, Rhode Island, and I got an email from a woman who said there was a young man who just appeared behind me. And he smiled and looked at them as if, look at her, isn't she something? And she said, we were all just so taken aback. Where'd he come from? We just didn't notice he was suddenly there. And she said, now that I had written to people that had taken my workshop and asked them if they had had any experiences they wanted to share in my book. I meant their own experiences. I wasn't looking for something like that. And she said, now that you're telling me about your book, I realize that was Dean. So things like that happened where there was validation.
That is so amazing. It feel, you know, oftentimes the ones that, like Dean, it probably was indications, but we as mothers, and we don't see it really, but only in retrospect do we realize that perhaps there was just a special light about them, and that they were supposed to be teachers of some kind. And do you feel that way about him?
I do. I always felt that he was smarter than me. He was, in fact, he called me his little girl a lot. Yeah, he was just wiser than me. He was spiritually wiser. He was so fun. He had such a wonderful laugh and such a light. And yeah, I just adored him. I like that kid a
Oh,
lot.
well, we're just getting warmed up about this subject, but Esther, we're going to take about a minute for a commercial, okay?
Sure, thank you.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Okay, we're back with Esther Luttrell. Is it Luttrell or Luttrell?
Luttrell.
Luttrell. French, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a French name?
Actually, it's Scottish.
Ah, interesting. Luttrell. It's beautiful. It
it's
rolls
not mine, you know. I inherited it from a husband, and I still have a husband, but I've still got the name.
Well, it rolls off the tongue beautifully.
It does, yes.
So
thank you.
You spoke a lot about, you know, his messages and stuff, but what form did they manifest? Did they come as voices in your head? Were they mostly in dreams? Did you sit
No.
down and did it come to you through like automatic writing, or how did you receive these messages from Dean?
From other people. Okay. How long do we have? I really don't mean to monopolize. I want to hear you talk.
Oh no, this is all about you, Esther.
Oh my. Well, thank you, but let's take the very first time that anything happened. This was, I decided that I would use his insurance money. In fact, the day I got the word that I was going to get his insurance money, I'm back in that rocking chair again, and I'm crying my eyes out again. And as I was crying, I looked across the room under my desk, and there was a box, two boxes. And they were filled with his story ideas. You have to remember, I worked at MGM. I worked in film for years. And he comes running in. He says, Mom, I've got a great idea for a movie. And I say, oh, super. Throw it in that box, honey. Let's work on it when I have time. Who wouldn't think? He's 28 years old. You know, going to have plenty of time. So now I'm sitting in this rocking chair, and I'm looking at those boxes. And I'm going, oh, my gosh. All of his stories when I had time. At that moment, I heard in my head, that's it, Mom. Go out and help others. I heard it so strongly that I said out loud, help how? And then I heard, do for others what you wish you had done for me. And I literally jumped up out of my chair, ran to my desk, picked up the phone, and at one point, I had been production coordinator on the television show Chips, if you ever heard
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that show lasted 6 years. And then my boss, my producer, went on to produce Miami Vice for 7 years. And at that point, when I called him, he was producing Diagnosis Murder. And I called and I got Don on the phone. I said, Don, I know what I'm going to do with Dean's insurance money. I'm going to go across the country finding young screenwriters, young aspiring screenwriters, and I'm going to give workshops, and I'm going to do for them what I wish I had done for Dean. You want to go? And he said, sure, count me in. So with the blessing of my husband and his wife, on weekends, because Don was still producing Diagnosis Murder, we did 40 workshops across the country. Well, I didn't know where to, I'd never even taken a screenwriting workshop, let alone give one. I just decided I would give what I wish that I had had when I was learning to write screenplays. I would just do what I wish somebody had done for me. Anyway, Dean was born in Kansas City, so I decided to have the first one in Kansas City. And as I was planning that, one day my phone rang, and I'm standing by my desk, and I answer the phone. Now, you have to know that in front of my desk was butted up to a picture window, and on the other side of the window was a little flower bed and then my driveway, and it ended at the flower bed. And I'm facing that direction, but I'm answering the phone, and this woman calls, and she says, "Hello, my name is," and she gave me her name, and she said, "I just want you to know I'm not crazy." I said, "Okay." She said, "I mean it. I'm very involved in political things here," and I think she lived in Fort Lauderdale, "very involved in politics here. I'm involved in the theater here. I am a substantial citizen. I am not crazy." I said, "All right." She said, "But I saw a story about you in," I think she said, "a magazine." And I'm wondering, story about me in a Florida magazine? Why? Anyway, she said, I just saw your name, and I started shaking, and I started just having such emotion. I'm just shaking right now. And I said, "I have to call this person to find out why would I have a reaction like this when I see your name." And I said, "Gosh, I'm afraid I don't know. I don't have a clue." And she said, "Oh, I don't know. My son just killed himself, and I'm just not thinking straight. Maybe I'm just coming apart." And I said, "Oh, your son just killed. My son just died too, so I do understand that." And as I said that, Brenda, I just happened to be kind of glancing up. In my driveway, not 6 feet in front of me, we all had a flower bed between us, was Dean, just as three-dimensional as my grandpa had been. And he was standing there grinning at me. But beside him was a young man I never saw before. And that young man had his left elbow up on Dean's right shoulder. Like, you know, just put your arm on a buddy's shoulder and hang there, you know? And I said to the woman on the phone, "My son's in my driveway." And I just told her he died. She said, "What?" I said, "My son, he's in my driveway." She said, "Your son is in your driveway?" And I said, "Yes, but he has a young man with him." And it hit me, that must be her son. And she said again, "Your son's in your driveway." Now she thinks I'm crazy. And I said, "May I describe him?" And I told her he had on an aqua and white striped, and that was the vertical, horizontal, we're just going across, not up and down, that's horizontal stripes, aqua and white, had a little white collar. At that time, alligator emblems on T-shirts were popular, and I said, "He has an emblem on his T-shirt, but it isn't an alligator." And I said, "He has on blue jeans and tennis shoes, and so does Dean." And then I said, "He's about Dean's height, which would make him about 5'9". And he's about Dean's weight, which would make him maybe 145. But remember these words, he was more toned than Dean," I said, "as if he plays sports, but not football, maybe like basketball." And then she said, "What color is his hair?" And I said, "Well, it's dark brown, light blonde, and it looks natural curly. That's very neat, and it comes to the top of his collar. But what I'm noticing about him is the boys are smiling at me, and he has the deepest dimples, and it looks like he has big hazel eyes, but his dimples are very deep." And she started crying. She said, "That's my son, and that's what he was wearing when he died." And I thought, and then the boys disappeared.
Wow.
And I don't even know what we said after that. I could not quote one word. I don't know. I don't know if we talked a little while, a long while. I don't know. But to this day, I think back on it, and I think, is that possible? Is that possible? How could that be? And yet it must have been, because that woman did call me, and that was her son. I believe now, and that happened because Dean's message through the next 13 years would be, Mom, life and love are eternal. We never leave you. And I believe that happened so that I had a stranger on the phone.
Validation for all
validation,
of this.
That's the whole point. And I can't tell you how many times I ask myself, are you sure that happened, Esther? And I remember telling her, same height as Dean, that would be 5'9", same weight, about 145. But he's more toned than Dean, not like football, but like he plays basketball. I remember those words. I had to have seen him. I had
you
to.
You know, you did.
And
that's the thing. It happened for a reason, right?
I can't. My mind just won't wrap around that I really, really saw Dean in person. And he was such good spirits. And so was the young man who killed himself. That answers a lot of questions to me. In fact, just yesterday, somebody was talking about people who commit suicide. And what a horrible thing they have waiting for them. Well, that certainly wasn't my experience. If that was her son, he just killed himself a few weeks before, and he sure looked wonderful and happy.
So perhaps he released himself from something, and it's not the horrific thing that people... There's such a stigma put on suicide. And
you know,
the spirits of suicide victims as well.
Oh, you've
heard that, haven't you?
What did you say about a suicide? You cut out for some reason.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's such a stigma that's put on people who commit suicide. Like, you know, their spirits are unhappy and they're going to hang around until they, you know, they find some sort of justice, or in extreme situations, you know, with religious stuff, that they're negative, they're cursed forever, they're cursed in the eyes of God, things like that. But perhaps it's all a way of going to the other side.
Well, of all the things I don't know, that sure hits the list. But I could tell you what I think, but I can't know. I think that there are as many experiences on the other side as there are on this side. From everything that I went through in the 13 years before I wrote the book, I would say there's no cookie-cutter answer to anything.
I love to hear that, because, you know, there's too many people really try to... I think they try to put it in a box in order to give people comfort, but I feel it would be quite the opposite, just what you're saying, because it's so painful to lose a loved one. And that message that, you know, and it completely makes sense that every individual case is different. Wouldn't you agree?
We're all individuals. Why wouldn't our experience on the other side be something that we probably can't even explain in the limited vocabulary we have? We're just going to have an unlimited experience, but so much of it based on where we have evolved when that time comes. That's how it appears to me. I don't know.
It's very interesting. What are your thoughts on infants who have the SIDS and die in the crib before they even have a chance?
That's what my son died of, Todd. That's what Todd.
The younger son, he died.
He was 3 months old. And I was so young, and I had never heard of, oh, how long do we have? Because I feel like I'm boring you out of your mind.
No, this is fascinating. Go on.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Well, let me tell you what happened, because I didn't put this in the book. I didn't even think about it until the book was already out. And one day this crossed my mind again. When I was very pregnant with Todd, I loved him before he was born. I just felt like I knew him before he was born. And that, I can't say that of the other children, except Dean. That happened again with Dean. Anyway, I was very pregnant. My husband and I were visiting my mother-in-law. she said, I have to spend the day at a Bible study, and I think it was Lee Summit. She said, would you mind going to the church and picking up two women who need a ride over there? I don't have time to go pick them up. I said, sure. So I go over to her church, and there are two elderly women standing out in the front, obviously waiting for her, but I pull up and tell her she wasn't able to be there, and I'm there to give them a ride. With them is a young woman, and with her is a baby about maybe three. The two elderly women get in the back seat, and the younger woman gets in front with me with her baby. And we're talking, because we've got like 20 miles, 25 miles or something to drive. And we're talking away, and I liked her very much. And she said, this isn't my first baby, but my first baby died of crib death. They weren't even calling it SIDS then, I don't think. She said crib death. And I said, oh my goodness, honey, I just don't know how I would live through something like that. And she said, you know, it's amazing. When the time comes, you find the strength. And I said, oh no, oh my gosh, not me. And she said, yes, you would. Well, anyway, we drive on over there. We go to the Bible study. Now we're leaving, and the back older ladies get in the back seat, and the younger woman gets in the front seat with me. And back we go to the church where I picked them up. When we got there, the woman opened her purse, took out a piece of scrap paper, and she said, next time you're in town, why don't you come by and see me? So she gave me her address and her address. I said, okay, thank you. They left. My husband and I go back that night to, we were living in Salina, Kansas, went back to Salina. My baby's born. 3 months later, we're in Salina. I had been out to interview for a job on television show. My husband had picked me up and taken me there, and now he dropped me off, had a babysitter, an older grandma type. She came to the door and she said, oh, what a wonderful little boy you have. What a good-natured little fellow. And I said, yes, he is. She said, I gave him his lunch, and now he's down for a nap. I said, oh, thank you. Now, Don is going to drop her at home, and he's going to go on to work. They leave the house. I walk toward the bedroom. I got to just the doorway. The crib was across the room so that the foot of it faced me, but it was solid. I couldn't see anything in the crib because it's solid. But I saw, just at the doorway, I saw, you know the picture we see of praying hands?
Mm-hmm.
I saw those come from the ceiling, through the ceiling, down to the crib, about maybe 10 feet long. And they were glowing. And they were praying hands. And I realized they were God's hands. And I just screamed, Todd's dead. And I turned around at the doorway and ran back through the house. Don was, my husband, was just pulling away. And I screamed it so loud that he turned around, ran back into the house, grabbed up the baby, tried to give him resuscitation. I ran next door. I don't know why I didn't use our own phone. I ran next door and used a neighbor's phone. You do strange things in those kinds of situations. And, of course, Todd had died. After the funeral, we went back a week later to my mother-in-law's home. And while we were visiting there, I said, you know, I still got the address of that lady that I met. And I'd like to go see her. So they said goodbye, and I got in the car, and I drove over. I went down the street where she said she lived. It's really Main Street in Grandview. There was nothing there but fields. There was a mill over on one side, and a man, just one person, was out there at a truck. And I said to him, excuse me. I showed him the piece of paper. Do you know where this address would be? He looked at me and he said, well, there can't be an address like that because that's the field across the street. there was no address like that. So when I got back, I asked my mother-in-law, I said, do you remember when I picked up your friends, your older friends, took them to the Bible study about 3 months ago, 4 months ago? She said, yeah. I said, there was a young woman that sat in the front seat with me with her three-year-old boy. Do you know who that was? And she said, no, I assumed it was a friend of yours. I never saw her before. I said, really? You're here since? She said, no, it's the only time I ever saw her. So I have no answer to that. But during that time...
Oh, wow. Well, listen, we're at the end of our interview. Esther, I could talk with you all night about this, and our viewers, the chat room is going crazy. So if you had one last message from Dean to our audience, what would it be again?
It would be, absolutely, he gave me proof beyond doubt. Your loved ones never, never leave you. Love and life are really forever, and I know it. He doesn't lie. I know it.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been an honor, Esther.
Oh,
and
we
look forward to all the other things that you've got planned with all your writing and everything else. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Brenda. Have a great evening.
Okay, you can find more information about Esther's books and her speaking engagements at www.estherlutrell.com. And that's estherlutrell.com. I want to take a moment and make a few announcements. Be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We will announce the call-in number later in the show, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. So it'll be later in the show, not now. If you are unable to catch our last week's show on Spiritual Boot Camp with Dr. Robert, you will find a recorded archive link as well as the archives of all of our previous shows on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It is our objective and our pleasure to connect with as many individuals as possible. So please share that link with others. Also, you can visit our psychicbloggers.com site to learn about everything from reincarnation to the how-tos of psychic development. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics. And I put an emphasis on that because they are accuracy-tested, and everybody actually goes through really rigorous types of interviews. And each of them has their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to visit and to find out more about them and to choose from a list of some of the most authentic gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each of us psychics. All of the co-hosts here on Psychic Access, talkradio.com, work at Psychic Access. And if you would like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at psychicaccess.com. We would love to hear from you. And by the way, site owners and webmasters can earn 50 cents a minute on every reading or on traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. For more details, visit http://psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, please invite your friends to join us in our chat room and listen to The Psychic Viewpoint. There is something for everybody, so please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to give the number, but this is at the end of the show. I'm sure somebody will put it in the chat room, Maureen. And the number for the call-in free readings is 724-444-4851. Okay, Maureen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
I know this show probably hit home with you, especially this time of the year, right?
Yeah. I don't want to get all emotional. Yes, it did. Yes. She's lovely.
And what has it been like for you since your father's death a year ago?
Well, you know, she said something, and that's what she said sometimes it just grabs your stomach. You remember her saying it? I do.
Yes, uh-huh.
It just, like, rips you, you know, and, you know, I thought... I thought I'm all that and then some. I've had some very, very dear friends, very close friends that have died previously, but I guess I never realized my first parent, and also because of my relationship was it was a one of very closeness, and also his mind was really, it was better than, clearer than my mind was. So it wasn't like, I feel it's been hard. It's been really hard, and then I feel really guilty about it feeling so hard. I feel like there's something wrong with me. And I'm not in a pity party or anything, but it's been really an eye opener, because I didn't see this coming. I didn't see it coming. I thought, okay, you know what I think, you know how the work we do, because I'm empathic, I can feel people's, really can feel what loss or feelings are going through with other things, but when it comes to me, I don't want to. I don't want to.
Because you're supposed to be strong for everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And also, yes, and it's not that I'm afraid of feel. Well, I am a feeling, but, I was always told, you're being too sensitive, you're being too this or whatever. And I know this whole stuff about my father and what's happened. And, and it was just a year ago, on the 6th, it was a year. And then his birthday's coming up on the 19th. So everything is kind of, but it's been difficult. And like I said, I've been more upset with myself not being stronger, I guess. And I'm learning that that shouldn't matter. So your guest was really, it was really great for me to listen to what she was saying. But you see, I haven't seen him. I don't get it. But I know that. I know intellectually, everything, but I haven't.
It's interesting that you said that you have mm-hmm. that you haven't seen him, because my husband, when his mother died, he didn't see his mother for almost a whole year, because I think his grief blocked it. Although I, from the first week she died, she came and spoke to me in dreams and appeared to me and everything. His grief blocked it, and I think that happens a lot. That could be what's happening with you.
I bet you, Brenda, you are onto something there. Because, I have some of my father's, I'm not supposed to say this, the Catholics get really, but I don't care. half of them is, I have his ashes here because he's somewhere. But he wanted part of his ashes set aside for when my mom dies. She has no choice. She's going to have some of her ashes. then we toss them like a salad. I thought it was great. He said he would. And then we'll do this out to sea thing because, he was a yacht racer, so this water ocean is very important to him. So I have his ash. I have the remaining part of it. It's not all that urine. And I would think. I started thinking. Okay, well, he's even here. But you know what? I think you're absolutely right about that. I think I have blocked it, and I'm self aware of that. Then I get upset about my. Then I go into snowball effect. I'm very aware, and then I get upset even more so on myself. I need to just stop.
Yeah, but I think it's just a process, and nobody can, you can't, no one can say how long each and any individual's process lasts or
yes,
anything like that.
I found that out. And, it just is, it's ripping me, it rips me apart. It just rips me apart. And I know that it is her suit. It was time. That's fine. But still adapting to him not being, he was great with me, and, it's been really lonely.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm just saying. Just saying. But
well, some of the things that she said I knew, that would give a lot of relief, because every case that she, it really is individual. And his choice to communicate with you will be in his own time.
When I'm ready, probably you're right, when I'm to another point where I'm not blocking.
Yeah.
I agree. It was really nice having, really nice listening to her. It was very heartfelt. It was lovely. Thank you for having her on, I guess.
And Steve, have you ever had somebody close to you pass over?
Yes, my grandmother's, but not a. No, I can't say that I've lost somebody in the way that your guest was describing. I mean, I don't have children and I don't anticipate having children. So whenever I speak with a client that's had a child transition to spirit, I always say, I can't say to you that I understand, but I feel it must be very, very painful. I have a very good friend in France whose son passed to spirit, and you know, she said that she's never experienced anything more painful. Now, we know that we continue to exist in the spirit world, and I was really moved by your guest's story and the way that she interacts with her son in spirit and the evidence that she's received. I think that the great challenge for people is that they do receive information, they do receive evidence, but it's often very surreal, and you have to be really alert and really open to the different ways that spirit communicates. And for people that are not used to working with spirit, possibly would be unclear or uncertain that the communication or confirmation they've received is for real. I wrote a blog about crossword puzzles a while ago, Brenda, because mm-hmm. when my grandmother passed to spirit, or just before she passed to spirit, my stepfather went to see my mother, who was sitting with my grandmother, and he said, "Look, you have to look at this crossword." And she said, "Oh no, I don't want to look at your crossword. My mother's about to pass." And he said, "No, you have to look at it." And because the answer to one of the clues was Cyril, which was my grandfather's name, and just a couple of minutes before, my mother had asked, "Can you give us confirmation that you're present right now for Mum?" And then the day after, my grandmother's name appeared in the crossword. And I wrote a blog about that, and I've had so many clients from around the world write to me saying that they've had that experience, that names have appeared in crosswords the same day or the day after somebody passed. But you see, if we're not open to it, we might miss the communication.
I'm glad you brought that up, because people always think, "Oh, well, it must be my imagination. This can't really be happening." But really, actually, they are receiving validation.
Yes. But
they
we
really
doubt.
Are.
Generally, people doubt.
Well.
And they miss the evidence. It's really important to listen. You know, there was a lady in the chat that was saying she could smell the cologne of somebody that had passed to spirit. And that's the kind of thing that we experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to be really open to all of the different ways that spirit communicates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you, Steve. Those are really good points. Now, Bobby, what is your feeling on kids who have crossed over, and what do they have to communicate?
Much like what the guest was talking about, you know, some of the things that really resonate for people, you know, and some of the points that she was talking about, especially this lady's son who had killed himself. You know, I've never seen suicides in a dismal place, and it makes me so angry when people in our field tell other people that. You know what I mean? Like, number one, how does that help? What does that do for clients to tell them that their son or daughter who has killed themselves is over in some dark, dismal place and has to, you know.
Like a purgatory,
like a
or
purgatory.
Some kind of. Exactly.
Yes.
Or they're being chastised for their life. Or,
isn't that crazy? And I've seen them saying, "You're keeping him here," or things like that too. And so in other words, now this person already has guilt, because victims of suicide always have this amazing amount of guilt behind them. And now they've got to deal with the fact that, "Oh, I'm keeping my son here. And now I feel so helpless because I can't do anything for him. And he's in this dark and dismal place." And so, boy, I almost cussed there for a minute. See how I have some
control. Oh my gosh,
once in a while. I know. I restrained, actually.
Oh.
I never do. And I get a lot of kids that do come through, or family members from the other side that are holding babies and such. And it's exactly what she said. You can't make that up. And you can't just have, you know, let's say, and I'm not saying this, but if she were, let's just say she chose to think this, or that's just her opinion. But I've heard so many like experiences from different people that are just like hers. There's something to it. Do you see what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
even if you don't believe, or even if she was just making it up, or she doesn't know it was real, it's too close to what I've personally seen and what I've heard from other people. So
So everybody can't be crazy, right?
Everybody can't be crazy. Not all of us. Just Steve, a little, but not everybody. So, you know, it really is. It's just fantastic. Yeah, and that is one of the toughest things with all the tools I know, and have learned, and how much it is that we help people move on through their emotions and such. I don't know what I would do if I lost a child. You know what I mean? Like I know I would go through it the
you
way that
go
I do,
on.
But
you would go
Jesus,
on.
That's got to be the worst, isn't it? The worst that I've come across.
Oh,
I think the
absolutely.
Worst in losing somebody. It's bad enough losing a person to cancer or a child, you know, and things like that. But a child who commits suicide too is one of the deepest emotional places I think that I've worked with people. It's very difficult.
Don't you think though that sometimes they may come into this life with just that?
They do.
They
yeah,
do.
Yeah, some of them do come in mind and they know that they're going to do that, or they're going to wait. They're like, you know, I'm just going to go down for this little bit. I have no idea for how long. And then all of a sudden they say, yeah, I was going to stay another 10 years. I'm just not now.
But it was too painful for them or something.
Yeah,
like
or
that.
Something. And they just get out, you know. And yeah, very much so. There's so many different reasons why people commit suicide. You know, for as many different people as there are, there's that many different reasons. It's not always sad or anger or no way out. There's so many different reasons why a person does what they do. So, yeah, and it's difficult even for parents and those who are left behind to, especially I've had some come through that are okay with what they did. You know, mostly there is some regret, or I know I screwed up, or I know that's not the way, and I'm doing better, and I'm helping, and that kind of thing. But some of them are actually okay with the fact that they did what they did. And that's a very difficult thing for, again, people who are left behind to understand. It's tough to explain feelings from the other side to those who are here grieving.
Because the pain... The death, no matter how it happens, it affects the living more than it does them. They
it
don't
does.
Feel they're on a different journey than
yeah,
on the other side.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Okay, Maureen, after hearing Esther's story and personal experiences, did you find some comfort? You know,
yeah.
Was it helpful for you
yes.
as far as your situation or your journey?
Yes, you know, also the chat room has been lovely tonight. Thank you, everybody. And, you know, I missed out
on the chat room.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's been interacting with my issue. I was telling them the story about people. I guess I'll tell it real quick. Yes, it was very nice and listening to Esther, and also the gentle kindness about her story. It was nice, very nice. But what I was telling people in the chat room, my father, you know, my mother has a lot of, you know, they were married 63 years, so she has a lot of little things going on there with my father, which is lovely. But the only thing I do remember, like a day after, 2 days after he died, I had a visit from him. I wasn't really sleeping. I had been sleeping, but I had a visit from him, and it was very clear. And he can't, yeah. I'll be real upfront. In the past, I've had issues with it, wanting to exit out of life since I was very young, and I had been having, well, whatever, putting my family through a lot of crap. But anyway, the thing of it was, my father, he came and he said, hi, you know, I was just checking in with you. And he started to walk up these stairs, and the stairs looked lovely. And I started following him, you know, like I do. Because I was, you know, I went everywhere, doctors and stuff. And he turned around, he goes, no, you can't come up these stairs. And I go, oh, yes, I can. And he goes, just like, that's how we interact. He goes, I go, you're not the boss of me. And he goes, so he kept walking. He's trying to ignore me. And he turns around and goes, did you hear what I said? And he goes, no. And he got, you know, my father would be, him and I had a really good relationship. He played. He was fun. We had fun together. But when he got upset, people would listen. You know, I don't care how, you didn't care how old he was. And when he got pissed off, he would say with all his might, no, or he'd put his foot down on something. You know, to everybody. And the thing that was, when he said no, I still started following him, and he turned around, he goes, stop. And because I think because of my past having some issues about me not enjoying the world that I lived in, or this earth plane, I always felt I belonged elsewhere. And it was a struggle. Now, I would never do anything because my daughter, okay, later on, you know, my daughter, of course. But sometimes, sometimes it was hard, and it wasn't like, I get so sad when I hear about other people wanting to do themselves go away, and but I can understand it, and I feel it, and I identify with it very much. So sometimes it's so painful. So, but what he was doing was, I think, was saying you can't go into this mode. You can't go into that dark. So it was a very interesting thing. But that's all I've ever had, you know, from wow. since he left. So you know, he was trying to tell me knock it off. So when I was getting, I get into these dark places now and then. I start feeling, then I'm letting him down. So part, I play these mind games on myself. I'm very aware of it.
You have to stop.
I got to stop. You know what? I wish I was in a lot of people are in denial a lot longer than, like, us. Do we notice that because of the work we do? Sometimes I wish I could be in denial a little bit longer, but I get my...
No, you can't, because...
No, you can't.
If you're going through an issue,
I can't.
Then the odds are that the person, that the next person you talk to has that issue, and you have to deal with it.
I know. It's crazy.
You know what I mean?
It's just...
You have to deal with it, and that's...
I know. So I can't be in denial, you know, but once in a while, can't you just, I go, can I just have a little denial? But no, it doesn't work like that. I have a good sense of humor about it. Thank you, Brenda.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, Steve, I don't know how you do your, because I want to get back to that validation thing, because it's so, I think it's so important for people to know that communication. I don't know how you do your work in groups, but how I've seen Bobby work is, you know, we'll have a group and then all of a sudden messages come through, and then the aura of the whole room just kind of becomes like this cauldron of like spirit energies, and you can feel them all around. Is that the same way that you do your groups? Steve? Hello, Steve. Earth to Steve.
I'm
Bobby, are you
yes.
there?
I'll just say yes for
Why
Steve.
Why don't you say yes? Let's talk about
I'm sure it's the same way for Steve. No, I don't know. It's different, isn't it, for every medium? I haven't watched a lot of other mediums work. It's interesting. And I don't think I've purposely stayed away, but even John Edward I didn't go see for the longest time, and he's the one that kind of got me into all of this.
I've done spirit, what I call spirit circles, where I contact those who've passed over and stuff, but I found it was such an interesting environment in which they all almost
now, like when I say to a person, don't just say, who do you see around me? Because it would take forever, wouldn't it? It would take hours and a long time just to all of a sudden go to everybody who's standing around you. So if you get more narrow and just tell me who it is that you want to hear from, then we'll start from that, because they do just all come around. And, you know, sometimes I think it looks like a Verizon network commercial, you know, they have these tons of people behind them.
So. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve's back.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yeah. Oh, Bobby disconnected me, Brenda.
Oh,
because he wants to talk more.
Is that what that button does?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Bobby. I had no idea.
I was talking, but and I wasn't on mute, but I had to unplug and plug in again my headset.
Bobby
messing around.
Sorry, I didn't know what that button did.
Yes, you did.
He did. He's a bad boy, I'm telling you. So how do you do your groups? Do you do them like Bobby does his galleries? I mean...
I call it platform mediumship. So I learned to use my mediumship in a public setting in the spiritualist churches in the UK. And we called it platform mediumship, when the medium would be at the front and front with the group and addressing the whole group. So I always feel that you know when you're going to mediumistic energy as opposed to psychic energy, because it's much faster. So you receive information much, much faster, and you feel much more emotional. I always feel much more emotional when spirit draw really close, and I can feel calling signs. My back goes very cold, and I know that that's when spirit have drawn close, and that I'm switching to a mediumistic link from a psychic connection. But you do see the aura change. And you can feel as well where the energy lines run. So you can feel spirit drawing very close. You can then start to communicate what you're seeing, hearing, or sensing. But often you can feel a line of energy that goes to a particular person in the audience. And you know that that's the person you're to address.
So
or you can say, I know I'm right here in the corner, but you just feel where the energy's flowing. It's very interesting.
That is interesting. Okay, we've got our first caller. We've come to that part of the show when we'll be taking your calls and questions. You can either call in or ask your question in the chat room. However, we do have to take the call-ins first due to their wait time. The call-in number for your free reading is 724-444-4851. Again, the number is 724-444-4851. Please be aware that each call will be automatically placed on hold and will be answered in the order received. Please relax and listen to the show while you wait. Be very clear and direct with your question. And we can only take one question per person, as this will allow for us to take all the calls waiting for a reading. Okay, Bobby, you're first from Wisconsin.
All right. Hello, Wisconsin. Are you there?
Yes, I was calling. My name is Jennifer. I'm calling to see what is going on. I'm having some troubles with my daughter, and I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is really going on with her answers as far as certain things that are going on. I don't know how to explain that. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. What kinds of – just tell me what's going on. I mean, you're having trouble – with your daughter, was she being secretive? I mean, I feel she's not telling you everything. You're right. There's something definitely behind her answers. But what types of things are going on, or what is it?
Well, I'm trying to get I'm trying to figure out. I'm doing a custody battle, basically. I'm not trying to get her per se, but I'm trying to figure out like what is going on with her thoughts and what she really wants. And I'm kind of wondering, like, if my mom has an influence on this, my mom, or something. Can somebody just tell me something? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to have to say I'm sorry, too, because I have no idea what you're asking me. So I guess the thing is that you're saying you're going to this custody battle, but not to try to get custody or... you're just wondering what's going on with her thoughts, but yet you're not telling me what you guys are talking about. So all I can do is just tune into kind of the situation for you and just give you what, I guess, whatever it is that I'm picking up from it. So again, I'm not sure in what way you're wanting me to help you.
Well, her father is trying to get her. And she, I guess, is honestly saying that she wants to be adopted. And I'm trying to figure out if that's actually what she really wants or if she wants something different and she's kind of confused on what's going on.
Well,
I guess that's what I'm asking.
I think part of the thing with kids is that some kids definitely know what it is that they want. But I think from what I'm picking up on her, there's just a feeling of wanting to escape. You know, there's so many people pulling at her right now. And so kids sometimes don't know what they want in that situation. What she wants is to just get away, right? What she wants is everybody just to stop pulling, everybody to stop fighting. Kids are very empathic, aren't they? They feel a lot of things that are going on around them. So they feel pulled in one direction and what dad's feeling. They feel what mom, you know, you're feeling. They feel what I think you said it was your mom, you know, whatever is feeling. So it's too much. It's overwhelming for her. Nobody,
right.
From the situation that I'm getting, and this is no offense to you, but it just seems like the image I'm being shown, and I'm not saying this is actual, but this is the way that they're giving me the information. It's like she's standing there and everybody is around her all arguing. Do you see what I mean? And she's like standing there with her ears covered. So that analogy lets me know, I mean, a picture's worth a thousand words, and kind of how the information works for me is that tells me everything I need to know. Do you see what I mean? And so we need to have her more in mind. We need to talk more with her. We need to get down to the core of what it is she actually wants instead of just staying away. Her dad, I think, right now is being the easiest on her. And there's not a lot of people who agree with him and his decisions and things like that, which, you know, we don't have necessarily time to go into that. I'm not saying that everything he's doing is correct, but right now she is connected more with her father in that direction than anyone else right now. So that may have something to do with... I'm sorry?
So do you know if she, I'm sorry, do you know if she wants to stay with her father, if she wants to be adopted? She's trying to say that she wants to be adopted. I'm wondering if that's her true feelings or if she's just saying that because somebody's coaching her to.
Okay, nobody's coaching her to. I did answer that earlier when I said that she doesn't want to be adopted. The thing is she's trying to escape. Okay? So she is.
Okay.
She would just as soon not be around any of you. You see what I mean? With all that yelling going on, or yelling, viewing, and all that kind of stuff, she just assumed to just escape and just to let me adopt out into another family. She just wants to get away. But if we were to look at the different family members of the easiest right now, that you know, if I had to have a choice, as I'm looking through her eyes, if I had to have a choice of who I'd want to be with, I guess it would have to be my dad type of feeling.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah, so... But again, she still is getting pulled from him, and I mean that's the least worst, I guess, of the situations right now. There's just so much arguing and so much love for her that it's really pulling everybody in different directions, and she's really kind of suffering from this. And this has been going on for about 2 or 3 months. It just keeps going. And
does she love me though? Does she love her mother? Does she love her? Does she want to be around her still? I mean, that's what I need to know.
Are you her mother?
Yes.
You're kind of talking about yourself in the third person there.
I know. I was doing that because I was trying to figure out, does she love me? Does she want to be around me? I guess I'm kind of confused. I'm kind of scared to hear that, in a sense.
And it's tough to find out all the answers you need, especially when it's really emotional like this. So what I can do is like I say, just kind of guide you in the way of what they're telling me. And then it might be beneficial to go back and listen to the archives and kind of listen to it again. Okay? So she loves all of you. But she's trying to escape. She's trying to get away from that. You're being too harsh. Your anger for the father, the emotions you have going on for the father are clouding your judgment just now, and she's getting in the way. I mean, I'm trying to give it to you really straight. I know it's not the best information to hear, but I really have to put it black and white like this. Do you see what I mean? Because if you don't understand all this information, there's nothing you're going to be able to do. It's not, she doesn't hate you. But all of this pulling and tearing is getting in the way because everybody else is arguing on their level and not keeping her in mind. We need to pay more attention. You want to get her back and open her heart a little bit more, not be so defensive against you. You need to start talking with her more, not in what you're going to do or the anger that you have for her dad, but more towards her and the love that you have for her. Do you see what I mean? And support her. Look, we're going to get through this. You know, that type of thing. Go ahead.
No, I know. I'm just trying to figure out, like, is there anybody around me that's trying to help me with this? Or is there just, like...
Oh, I hate to interrupt, Bobby, but we have so many people waiting.
Sorry, love.
Okay, it's fine. That's
sorry.
All right. Thank you, though.
Okay. If you would like, many of us, including myself, work on psychic access, and you're more than welcome to come in and join us, and we might have a little bit more time to talk about all of this.
That's all right. Thank you. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Good.
Thank you, Bobby. I feel for her. I want to apologize for last week. We had really bad computer issues and we weren't able to get to all the calls. So again, I apologize. And also, I just want to throw in that for anybody listening real quick, that if you want to get a reading, more detailed reading on your question and your concerns, you can contact any of us here and any of the other psychics on psychicaccess.com. Okay, Steve, you've got a caller from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Brenda. Who's calling from Wisconsin?
Hello, my name is Duena.
Hello, Duena. How are you?
Hello.
Good. How can I help, Duena?
My name is Duena. I'm calling about, I'm wondering if you could tell me about my financial situation. Like, how is this going to get better?
Well, I can't hear you very well, Duena. There's a noise. Can you hear me?
Hello? Can you hear
Duena, me? Can you hear me properly? I'm hearing a lot of noise and feedback.
Yes, I can hear you now. I can hear you a lot better now.
Okay.
I was wondering if you could tell me about my financial situation and if it's going to get better, what you see in my near future.
I feel that you're over the worst, Duena, to be honest with you. I feel as though things got really, really tough for you. Drawn to 2-3 months ago, and I feel at that time you were very fearful. It felt like everything was just dissolving and falling away from you. But I do feel that you're over the worst. I do feel that money's very challenging for you now. I do still feel that you're not sure which way to turn, how to actually fix the situation. And I know that it's still tough, but it is going to improve. I feel that in January, your finances will improve for you. But my guides are saying you've really got to be focused on what you want to be doing, what your role is in the world, how you want to contribute in the world to society, to other people. You know, we're all in service in some shape or form. And it's really by focusing on what you're most passionate about that you'll get the best return. As I said, I feel finances start to improve a fair amount in January. I feel that there's some money that comes to you before Christmas, actually, that will give you a boost, that will help you start to get on track. And I think from January, things do improve for you. But there's a professional opportunity for you. And in fact, more than one. It's as though you work, but you also have another opportunity, something that you do yourself in your own time. But I feel that takes shape around the middle of February. But it doesn't feel to me that you know what your path is, that you know what your role is. And that's part of the frustration, I feel.
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, I'm kind of torn. I don't really know which way to go. Times are just really tough right now.
It is. But you will be okay. But meditate and reflect upon your greatest talents and how you can use them to make a difference in the world and make your living. If you do that, I feel that there's good opportunity for you in February professionally. And, you know, if you want to contact me on Psychic Access or come and see one of the readers on Psychic Access, they may be able to help you actually look at what those talents are. I really enjoy identifying what a person's greatest talents are and how they can most easily make their living and their contribution in the world. But it's something that takes longer than the few minutes we have here. But as I said, you'll see things improving in the new year. But focus, focus, focus on what you really want to be doing and giving to the world and how you should make your living doing that.
Okay. And what were you saying about around Christmas? What's supposed to happen around Christmas?
I feel that a sum of money comes to you before Christmas. It's not huge, but a sum of money comes to you before Christmas that helps you. And
do you know what that's coming from?
Improving January.
What's that?
As I said, things improve in January.
Okay. What's supposed to really happen in, like, Christmas, January? Is January supposed to get a lot better? I know that you just said that,
What I was saying is that a sum of money comes to you before Christmas, surprisingly. And then in January, your finances start to improve. And in February, there's a good opportunity for you to make money if you've got really clear about what your greatest talents are and how you can use those to contribute in the world. And if you do that, I feel that you'll be well rewarded. And from February, you'll see that work is steadier and finances improve for you steadily. Okay?
Okay, I understand.
Well, good luck, Duena.
Well, thank you so much. You helped me out. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye now.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay, is it me at my turn? Hello? Brenda, are you there?
I think we might have lost Brenda for a moment.
Well, I have to imitate Brenda now. Gosh.
Okay, well, I'll do it. Hi, Maureen, do you have a caller from Tennessee?
it was operator error.
<That's> okay.
Maureen, it's Tennessee.
Thank you. Hi, Tennessee.
Hello, hi. Tennessee.
Hi, what's your name, please?
Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth. And what can I help you with?
I am so wondering about my love life, my future love life.
Okay. So you're asking, okay, because of the time restraint on here, is there someone in particular you are wanting to ask about? Or are you completely open? The fish is out. is there some one person so I can most help you better that way?
Okay, well, I'm dating somebody right now, okay. But it's long distance and...
Okay, so you want to cut, but you like, okay, I think I got it. Oh, okay, you know what? This is what I'm getting. And it is long distance, which is fascinating to me, but I also feel that you've been patient before to the point where you didn't see any, all the patients that had paid off, or you tried to, you didn't, and your vested interest in other relationships didn't seem... Whether they were, is this the first time you've ever had a long distance?
No. Oh, yeah, practically,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I always think there's, well, I'll get to that. I feel definitely that this is a good thing for right now. I'm not telling everybody, okay, go out and have long distance. For you, I'm picking this up in different ways. Now, I would say to somebody else, or generally speaking, it might be different, but what I'm getting with you is I feel that you have the strength available for this, and it may be, even though it's long distance, I think what this is at this time in your life, there's a reason. I always think there's a reason, there's signs for this. I see that you have the pain that you've gone through, my gosh, has been extremely deep with relationship issue, and it may not have been long distance, of course, but I do feel that you're heading towards a rebirth, not a physical death, but a rebirthing of the old stuff, and it's coming from really painful. And it's like three or like a triangle that's just ripped your heart out. And I feel that with this long distance relationship, if you're going to be involved with anybody right this, or being in a certain situation where you'd be open to somebody, trusting somebody, right now for you, long distance is the best. Because, like I said, you need room to be able to go through what I see. It's still happening. I mean, I hope you're following me okay on this. However, I know that you in the next 2 months you won't be able to juggle it as easily as you have been now, and I don't feel that the person that you're seeing long distance, it looks like he comes and goes, or he can be real flighty, is he? He looks very charming.
He's broken up with me a couple times for, like, no reason. I don't know if it's because he's stressed or what, but...
Okay, you don't have time for that.
It's pretty rocky for me and him right now.
Well, probably I'm going to say it. I think ideally for you, it might be a better, good time to get through, I call it the work. It's very hard and it's very painful. But I do feel, again, that you have the strength available. And I don't think you have time for anybody giving you any crap. Okay, this guy, long distance wise, because you need, you know what, like I see you're strong and you can thrive through, it'll be hard. I don't think you need somebody around right. That's why you probably, like I said, you picked the long distance one, I think unconsciously, purposely, you know. I feel that you don't need the likes of his issues. So it's not like I see he's a bad person or anything else, but I think you're more important right now. Do you get what I mean? I think you're absolutely more important what's going on. And I feel by doing that, you're going to be healthier. But you're carrying too much of a burden if you keep this going on, if you have to worry about him breaking up with you, feeling badly. It takes you away from what the real issue is with what you're going through.
Like, so my suggestion is maybe see anybody new in my life coming up?
Right now, I suggest that you be with yourself and get through this time. I mean, you can bring in anybody you want, but I think it will... it's a diversion. I think I really feel you need to be good and gentle to yourself, and it may mean being alone for a bit, but I think my feelings are you'll be healthier by this February, I see a much healthier you to be finding a healthier relationship with a healthier good person, you know?
Yeah.
I said, you know, I know it's hard because it's painful, but being alone, you can, I know you can handle it. And I think that if you get through this, you'll have done what you need to do, the work, I call it. Just have to, you must know this. It's too much to have somebody else in your life keeping you away from having to complete this. You know, I say it, but it's true. You can do it.
Yeah, I know I'm a strong person. I know I can do it, so.
And you know what? I see that much healthier, because if you'll delay this whole thing, and you could be in the midst of a bunch of other things that just don't, you know, keep, you know, too much burden handling everybody else's stuff. Work, men, it doesn't belong to you. You have your own stuff, and you need to be gentle and kind to yourself right now, not being worried about whatever their issues, you know. I see February will be a good month. It'll be a healthy month, and I see you thriving. You'll be happy.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I needed
that. Well, it's your reading, but I wish you well, and, you know, it'll be okay. It's hard. It'll be fine. You'll be fine. Okay, Elizabeth? Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Maureen.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Okay, next, it's me with a caller from Illinois. Hi, Illinois. How are you?
Hello?
Hi there. What can I do for you tonight?
I am ready for a strong, healthy relationship. I've kissed enough frogs. Where's my prince?
Now that is the million-dollar question, honey. Let's take a peek here and see what's ahead. Well, you're in a good place right now because it really feels like all these relationships from the past, you've really seen the light with them, and you know that, you know what, that is just not going anywhere. And I really feel when I look into this that there is a strong man, and he's coming in. He's in the new year, though. And the new year, to me, you know, I sometimes see the new year as, you know, at the end of October, kind of with the changing of the seasons. So with the changing of the seasons, I see a man who comes in who's different, and he's responsible. He works in the kind of the arena of like a public servant. So he could even be in, you know, in the field of law in some way. He has a, it looks like he has
a strong,
mustache.
Healthy relationship, you know?
What?
A strong, healthy relationship.
It looks like he's determined. It feels like he's no nonsense, and that's what you need. I mean, because you're a strong woman, you're straightforward.
Yeah. Right. I don't want a user or a loser. No.
You don't want a user or a loser, and you know, but you also want someone you're going to have a powerful attraction for. And I believe that you've been you have been protected. The universe didn't allow it to happen with these flakes for a reason, honey, because you're waiting for this opening, and now it looks like the road is finally clear. There's nothing gumming it up, and nothing and no one gumming it up for you to meet the special person. So you are going to meet somebody, I feel, within the next 30 days, but you're going to meet him in an unusual way. It almost feels like an invitation. Yeah.
An invitation?
Something related to work or money. And it really feels like this person's going to come in and you know, from the get-go, there's a conversation, there's a click between the two of you, and you know what? It's about time, right?
Yeah, it is about time. Yes, Lord.
You know what? It's
about
when you get really
time.
Fed
you say
up.
The end of October?
Yeah, right around the end of this month.
Because I go out, I mingle, I talk, I socialize. What's the deal?
It's just, you know what it is? Everybody's timing is different, and this type of thing kind of meets you, it hits you from left out of left field. And I see him coming in, and you're not going to expect him. When you first meet him, you go, wait a minute, you know, who is this guy? I've never seen him around here before. Looks like he's new to the area. He's somebody that you know is related to this man.
Somebody I know is related to this man?
Yes, like he could be a cousin or a distant relative, but he comes from out of town, and he's new to the area. That is your clue.
Oh, okay.
And he works.
He's not
going to
be long distance, I hope.
And he, pardon me?
He's not going to be a long distance one, I hope.
No, he's new to the area, but he works in, he's like a public servant, so he could work in the field of law. Yeah.
He works?
He could, it feels like, I know we're fading in and out here. He works in the field of law, something in the field of law.
Okay.
And, okay. Like I said, it takes you by surprise, and it almost has to happen, because right when you, this stuff happens with us women when we're fed up. We've had it. We don't want to go out to one more thing. We don't want to go to any invitations, but we end up dragging ourselves out, and there you go. That's when you meet the special man, and that's what's going to happen to you.
Wow. I'm going to meet him from somebody else. I'm just going to be out somewhere and meet him.
You're going to meet him from a friend. From somebody that you know is related to him, and it'll be an introduction, and it'll be something you're not expecting.
So this is going to be like the end of this month?
Yeah, after the 31st of October. Everything that's going on now is just kind of, you know what, just relax and enjoy your life. It just doesn't look like anything sticks right now. Not that you won't get a date, or not that you can't get a date, but somebody special.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
After the 31st of October.
You got it, honey. Okay?
Huh? Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Bobby.
Hello.
Oh, I like that. What a voice. Oh, there's from the big state of Texas. There's
big state of Texas.
Yeah.
Hello. Who's on from Texas?
Hey, Rob, it's Mary.
No, it's not. Who is this really? Don't tease me now.
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. What can I do for you? What would you like to talk about?
I have a little dilemma. I've been given the option to move back to my home state, but I really enjoy being here, and there's a reason that I like being here because of a certain person. So I want to know what you see if I end up here, and if you see a marriage or a divorce in the near future.
So what you're doing, let me just get it straight, is you've worked hard in your personal life and
yes,
finally started allowing some really good things to come into your life these past 7 to 8 months. It feels to me that things really started picking up. The momentum started picking up. Yeah.
Yes.
And now that these things are coming in, you met somebody as well, and you want me to take a look to see if this relationship's even going to work out or not. Cause if it's not, you'll go ahead and go for the opportunity. Well, if it is, you'll turn down the opportunity to stay for the guy.
Well, see, we're both married, and we stayed as friends, and we talked about stuff. But like we said, we're both married, so I don't know if it's going to go any further, because he knows that I might be moving, and I don't know what his thoughts are on it. You know, I know he's bothered by it, but I just don't know if
he's bothered enough to leave his wife and go with you.
Yes.
But you're also married.
Yes.
So I'm not saying that in a judging way, but what I'm just with the situation. How long do you think it would take to get things worked out before he decided to leave? You had to have to take care of your situation and the two of you to be together. That might be a while.
Yes. It probably is. I just don't know if... Yeah, I just don't know, period.
Right. My point is, okay, it should always be the lineup and of priorities should always be God, universe, spirit, however you want to define that, you, then family, and then job. Meaning...
Right.
You, again, have started to really finally allow some wonderful things in your life that you're meant to do, and you should not put it on hold for the possibility of love. Do you see what I mean? It would be different if you guys were in different situations, just together yourselves, and wanting to know where this was going to go, and then you would have to think seriously, is he going to move with me, or do I have to stay here and turn down this offer or whatever? You are the type of person that you are is not going to have any type of problem attracting anybody in your life. This isn't the only guy for you. I'm not saying he's not the guy. I'm just saying that don't sell yourself short. That you can attract other types of love to you that are in a better situation. And when you're in a better situation, I think it would be a mistake to not go to this other opportunity that you've attracted to you because of the work that you've done, not go there for this guy. I think that would be a mistake.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Okay.
It's an impossible situation. And again, it has nothing to do with he's married, you're married. That happens so much. So many people are doing that. So it's not that it has anything to do with that. It's you creating some wonderful opportunities in your life that you're thinking about shutting out for this person. Or just, it's not even really this person so much as it is just the situation. You know what I mean? Like the situation
is
love and having somebody.
And I want to stay here. It's just my family, like my mom might be moving back. So, overall Texas is the better choice, but don't know if I'm doing the right thing and staying.
Right. Not for those reasons. If you were to ask me, I'm thinking about staying for this guy and giving up the other opportunity. I don't like those reasons.
Not necessarily all for him.
Yeah, I don't see that being good reasons. In other words, I don't vibrate. That doesn't feel good to me. You know? I would hate to see you stay behind just because of that. I think I don't know that this relationship will carry on. I don't see it going anywhere. Right now it feels like the tires are spinning, you know, in the mud. It just feels like the tires are just spinning. That's why I also think to give up an opportunity for him alone would be a mistake.
Okay.
You see? So don't let that be your reason. If you decide to stay, that's one thing. But because your mom might be moving back and because you have other wonderful things going on for you. But don't make him your sole reason for turning down this other opportunity you've created.
Okay.
If that makes sense, okay?
That makes sense.
You've just worked hard, you know, and you just worked hard on yourself and some, again, wonderful things that have come in. I just would hate to see you let it go for a relationship, any relationship. I would, you know, even if it wasn't your guys' situation, again, if it were just the two of you, we would still have to assess, is he worth it for you to stay behind?
Right. You know? Right.
Right. Okay. I just want you to understand. I felt like I had to say that again.
Okay, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks for calling in. I appreciate the talk.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bobby. You know, sometimes, you know, you get caught in a situation like that, you know. We can see it. They can't see it because they're in the middle of it, you know.
And I think sometimes we hope, don't we? Hope so much for love, so which is, I think, what this is the case, is just so much for romance and having somebody there. That if there's a possibility, we would rather, I think a lot of people would rather have love and closeness and somebody there than a job. Or at least they put that first.
It's definitely at the very top of everything, isn't it? And so before money.
Yeah, before anything. And
before
they don't
anything.
Some self show. I can always get money. I can always get a job. I may never find another person who cares about me like this person does. And that's just crazy, isn't it? You know, you just have come to find out differently, I think. Out of 7 billion people, you know, certainly you can attract more than just one person to you. So I don't know. It's difficult. And you have to kind of guide people to thinking more selfishly, I think, about themselves, not about love.
And you know, there's that whole soulmate thing, and sometimes it's the devil, because really, you can feel this intense connection with somebody, and you know it's from another lifetime, you know you've been together, but they're married and you're married, you know?
Short circuit, and you can short circuit each other out if you try to get it. So it's a very sad thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Or I knew somebody, I'm not saying who it was, it was a priest and a woman, and it was very, I mean, and I'm open to, I don't judge anybody, but this was
that is pretty intense.
Yeah,
really?
It was, and it wasn't acted upon, but it was really a very, it was a sad situation. And I know it was coming from some other time period. They didn't act on it, but it was very intense. And I felt, and there's times where if I felt otherwise, and it was like really not very good.
Are you sure
character.
This wasn't you, Maureen? No.
It was, Brenda. God, come on, man. You didn't do it.
I blew your cover, honey.
You being the Catholic, I forgot. Darn it, Brenda.
I blew your cover on that one, honey.
You're the Catholic on here.
I almost slipped and said, here's the thing, Maureen.
You know what? You better stop, because this is the thing. You wanted to, like, make him forget his vows, I bet, huh?
Yes. Why are you married to God? Why aren't y'all part of God?
How about this, honey? Hubba hubba.
You know, pretty soon that will change. I love Catholics.
Married now. They have married priests now.
I know, and it's about time. They would have eliminated a lot of that other stuff that had been happening, don't you think? Do you know, Brenda, I was thinking about this real quick, because you were raised Catholic, and when I went to Catholic school, I think you said you did. I only had, through all the years I had, only all the years I went to Catholic school, which was a long time, I only had one real nun in first grade. The rest were lay, I guess, teachers, and the one only real nun I had, she converted to a regular person later.
Well,
so what's that
experience with nuns, let me tell
you.
But
of all the people, I mean, all the other ones, but what up with that? I mean, it was like weird. It's like, that was my journey. No, we met more. I don't want to be a nun anymore. It's all about me.
They met you. They didn't want to be a nun.
Yeah, it's always about me. No. Anyway, that was a great show, Brenda. It was a fantastic show tonight.
Oh,
thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I mean, there was something for everybody there.
Yeah, and the chat room, thank you to everybody in the chat room and everybody that's listening. Not in the chat room. Thank you, everybody. Everybody was very, it was really nice connecting with everybody. And,
oh, I missed the chat room. I just peeked into it.
But it was really nice. Everybody was really very kind to me, and I thank you. I'm not pity partying myself, but very much sharing their own experiences about what your guest, you know, was the topic tonight. It was very nice. So thank you, everybody.
Well, you know, I really felt for her, and the stuff that she talked about was amazing, and I could relate to some of that stuff. You know, I haven't lost a child, but I've experienced, you know, family members who've passed, you know, so it's pretty interesting. It's the validation, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. And it feels real supported to me. Yeah. Makes you feel like, hey, get over it, shut up.
Yeah, snap out of it.
I still have a sense of humor. I got a sense of humor, and that's what a really good thing is, everybody. Sense of humor is a good thing. Absolutely.
Well, you have to. What are you going to do?
Especially when you're into a priest. I'm joking.
Oh, the truth comes out.
I'm sorry. You open that door, and I'm closing it. I didn't go to that movie theater. You brought
me. You ever see
me.
That movie, The Thorn Birds?
Yes, I did. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
My girlfriends and I would get together and watch that series, and my boyfriend would come in and we'd go, you know, you got to leave. We're having our martinis and watching The Thorn Birds.
Good Catholic girls, we all know about us.
I know. Blow up that skirt of that priest, right?
I didn't say that. You did.
Uh-oh. You were thinking it, though, huh, Maureen?
Hey, all right. Brenda,
okay, well, you know, that brings us to the end of yet another fantabulous show. I want to thank Doug, who works behind the scenes and keeps us on track as our executive producer. And thank you to you, my wonderful co-host, for joining me tonight. Next week's show will be anchored by Steve. Steve, what do you have in mind?
Well, we have a show with a guest who has written a book all about dreams and dream interpretation. Her name is Meredith Smith, and she's just published her new book. It's called Dream Workers, Behind the Veil of Night Shift Dreams. So she'll be telling us about her book and also how to understand and interpret the messages and symbols that we receive when we're dreaming.
Oh, fascinating. People love that stuff. Definitely. Yes. Oh. All right. Well, good night, everybody.
I say good night and bless your hearts.
Good night.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers, get access, psychic access, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.